let's start with a few minutes of the parasha and then go into the Gemara. We've been talking about the opening essays of Rabbeinu Bechaya as something that's interesting to work on, and that Rabbeinu Bechaya opens each parasha with a posuk from Mishle. And I mentioned to you sometimes it's the same posuk that an opening medrash might use, and sometimes it isn't. This particular week it isn't a medrash. He just picks the verse to start with and to analyze. And what he does typically is analyze that verse from Mishle as an introduction to the parasha. So this week is particularly interesting because the parasha starts off with Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Bo El Paro, come to Paro. So this is where Hashem introduces the idea that he's deliberately hardening Paro's heart. Up until now, it's been Paro's hardening his own heart. At this point, he introduces the idea of him actually deliberately hardening Paro's heart. What does that mean? What does the hardening of the heart mean? So on that, Rabbeinu Bechaya starts with a pasuk from Mishle. The first part of the pasuk is quite well known. Ashrei Adam mefached tamid. Happy is the man who's always afraid. Umakshe libo yipol bara. And somebody with a hard heart comes to a bad end. Bad things land up happening. And what's interesting with this pasuk is it's so contrary to kind of modern thinking in the world of... It struck me the other day, just reading one more article on happiness. It's coming to a point where it's almost nauseating, the articles on happiness. And I thought to myself, and who says happiness is even that important? You know, who says it's that important? I know in the American Declaration of Independence, we've all got the right to pursue it, but who says we don't have a right to have it? And who says pursuing happiness is really the thing we should be occupied with? I remember my father used to say to people in Shirim, if you want to be happy, take a look at cows in a meadow. They're happy. Human beings are naturally happy. Cow, you want to be happy, be a cow. A human being is capable of so much more than happiness. And yes, happiness is a great bracha if one is. Happiness is an outcome of what one's doing and one's fulfilled and one has... things are good with family, and one has parnosa, and one is happy. That's great, but is happiness all that important? And it was interesting. I don't know if any of you saw the movie that most people consider to be very light and frivolous and not very well done, which is all true, but there were one or two pieces of wisdom in it. I don't even remember what it's called, the Asians, the very wealthy Asians.
Crazy Rich Asians,
is that what it was called?
I didn't see it.
And if you remember, if any of you saw it, there's a point at which the Chinese woman says, you'll never fit in, because for you Americans, happiness is what's important. And you don't get it. There are more important things than that. There are things you give happiness up for because they're more important. And a person who is from a culture of the pursuit of happiness can never fit in. And it's only when the girl gave up her boyfriend or her fiancé because it was kind of the right thing to do in their culture and sacrificed her happiness that the mother-in-law switched and said, well, she's still a Chinese girl after all. But just that piece, that understanding of is happiness all it's cracked up to be, and how much unhappiness are we creating by establishing the expectation of happiness. Person, I don't even remember who it was telling me about his mother, who was a survivor, was asked how she coped and about her childhood, which was incredibly poor, and the struggle, and she was talking about it. It was actually a piece online, I think it was actually a video piece. A woman from Manchester, I remember now, and she tells a story, it's a wonderful story, and the interviewer says to her, but were you ever happy? She said, you know, I didn't know that happiness was something we were supposed to be. I didn't know you were supposed to be happy. We were what we were. We did what we did and we lived our lives. I wonder how much unhappiness we create through establishing the expectation that if you're not happy, there's something wrong. And here we've got a pasuk of Ashrei Adam Mefached Tamid. And we know fear and coming from a place of fear and all of that. And that's true, and we'll see why. But here Shlomo HaMelech is saying, and he uses a word of Ashrei. What does Ashrei mean? So it's normally translated as happy is the man who is always, or happy is the human who is always afraid. Ashrei doesn't really mean it. Happiness, it means a state of well-being. The man who is constantly mefached, or the human, Adam is a human being. The human being who is constantly afraid is in a state of well-being. Why? And what is the role of happiness, or where does happiness fit in? Umaksheli bo, and then the opposite of mefached is hard-hearted. What does that mean? Why is that hard-hearted? And Rabbeinu Bechaya goes into a beautiful analysis of the importance in an ethical life, in a moral life, of considering the consequences of every action. And that's what pachad is, that's what fear is. Fear is, when you get paralyzed by fear, it's because you think, whatever I do, you're thinking of all the consequences and you get paralyzed. You're not afraid of the immediate thing in front of you, you're afraid of the outcome of what you're about to do. That's where fear comes in. And moral fear is, yes, I fear the outcome of doing something wrong. I fear the outcome of doing something that's not good for my neshama. I fear the outcome of doing something that doesn't please Hashem. I actually fear that outcome. Because if we're fearless about that, that's makshe libo. That's the hard-heartedness, which we sometimes call courage. Courage isn't when you don't care about the outcome. Courage is when you're willing to jump out of a plane and you're not thinking about what happens if my parachute doesn't open. You don't think about that. You jump and you trust it'll open. And in some cases, that's a virtue. But when it comes to behavior, it isn't. And the Rabbeinu Bechaya talks about the how exceptional the Mido is, and he says it uses the word Adam rather than Ishya, because Adam comes from Adoma. Adam is the primitive human being. And how much of a state of well-being this human develops through doing something which is so not primitive. The idea of thinking, of being knowledgeable of consequence and thinking of consequence, that's no animal can do that. And a primitive human being doesn't do that. Even before we even come to moral levels, even on an economic level, primitive societies don't invest in the future. They don't perceive, they don't understand that whole dimension of the consequence of spending everything today, of consuming everything today. They can't perceive the consequence of taking some of what is today and putting it away for tomorrow. That's very sophisticated. And therefore, the Shlomo HaMelech says, when an Adam, when a primitive human being can live in a way where he fears consequence and is aware and conscious of consequence, that's Ashrei. Then he develops a life which can be a rewarding life. Whereas Makshi Libo Yipo Bera. And so now when we go into the parasha, Hashem says, Ichbadati Ad Libo, what's he done? What's Hashem done? He's just returned him to that primitive level of not understanding causality and not understanding or not being interested in the outcome. So initially, Paro himself hardens his heart. So isn't prepared to accept that it's my actions that are causing these plagues, that it's my actions that are responsible for the destruction of my economy and my society. That correlation he's not prepared to make. There are scientific reasons. The blood is for this reason, and the tzvah the imo because of some plague. And there are ways to explain every one of the makos, and that is the nature of miracle, is that there are ways to explain. Otherwise, there would be no bechira. Even Kriyas Yamsuf, there are ways of explaining it. And if one wants to explain miracles away, one can. And Paro explains them away. He doesn't take personal responsibility for that. Just as we don't today, it's very hard for us to accept that. I mean, we as a society, we're getting to the point where we're accepting that environmental damage is an outcome of certain things that we do. Fine, that's great. So we throw our garbage around and we burn fossil fuel and all that isn't a good thing, and it's having effects on the environment. That's taken us a long time to get there. But now we kind of understand, some of us, not everybody, the countries where they haven't made that correlation yet, and they don't feel any kind of responsibility to be environmentally conscious, because that they're not aware of that correlation. But the idea that the environment is not only responding to our direct intervention, like burning fossil fuels and throwing out garbage, but also our moral behavior, that we don't make that correlation. We don't make the correlation that the violent weather that we've had over the last year has anything to do with the way we behave. That would be, that wouldn't be the kind of conversation that one could have in an intelligent secular society in the United States. There's no correlation. That's para. There's no correlation with what's happening in the environment and my behavior. It's coincidence. And so I'm not going to change my behavior to try and get a different outcome in the climate. That's no difference to what 99.something% of Americans would say. If we were to say to an American person, you know what, you should start talking a little less Lashon Hara, it would have an impact on the environment. What kind of response are you going to get? That ability to see any kind of correlation, even though we're getting much more conscious and aware in quantum mechanics and in related areas of the connectedness of the whole world and of every molecule of the world, we're beginning to, in certain parts of science, we're beginning to understand that there is an amazing correlation, and that every little action that a human being does in one part of the world affects all sorts of things. We're beginning to understand things that up till now we've only had in Kabbalah. But still, the average person doesn't relate to a need to modify behavior because of physical outcome as a result of a moral decision. And at the end of the day, that's the second paragraph of the Shema, isn't it? Etc., etc., then the rain will come and this will happen and that will come. It doesn't say if you take care of the environment will take care of you. It says if you take care of yourself as a moral human being, the environment will take care of itself. It's not about the physical interaction, it's the moral interaction. So it's very interesting when we learn about Paro, we think, what an idiot. Doesn't he get it? How many makas does he need? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And what about us? How many makas have we had in the last 2 years? The United States, let's just take one country. How many makas have we had in the last 2 years? The fires in California and the hurricanes on the East Coast and the unusual, I'm not even talking about the kind of things we get every year, I'm talking about unusual things in the last few years. But nobody stops to say, as a society, should we be living any differently? Should we be doing anything differently? Is this any kind of consequence? We don't make that correlation. We don't really believe the second paragraph of the Shema. We say it every day, but we don't really believe it. Because if we really believed it, we would be writing about it. We would be talking about it. It would be something that would be worrying us and concerning us. But we're willing to let it go. So it's when we look at Paro, we've got to look at him a little more sympathetically and say, how much better are we really? In this particular area, I'm not making any kind of comparison about the Rosh that he was and the good, honest people that we are. I'm just talking about in this one area of Ichbadati Ad Libo. Are we an Ashrei Adam Mefachei Tamid? Do we understand the well-being that comes from fear of consequence? And consequence, not just physical consequence for physical action, but physical consequence for spiritual action? And vice versa, spiritual consequence for physical action. Do we really get that? Do we really understand that? Or are we also like Paro, makshe libo, we've hardened our hearts, yipol bero, and the result of that is things get worse and worse, and we don't really do anything about that and notice it. It's just a beautiful and quite a shaking introduction of Rabbeinu Bechaya into the parasha. Okay, let's try and make more sense of the Gemara we're learning. So far, just the Mishnah that we're learning. So let's go through it again. Now we'll have a little bit more familiarity with it, so it'll be a little easier to do. Let's start with our own Mishnah in Bechoros Daf Yud Tes Amud Beis, beginning of chapter of Perek Shlishi. And again, you remember we talked about the fact that, one of the amazing things that Gemara does with us, for us, is gives us frameworks by which we can manage uncertainty, a way to live with certainty in a circumstance of uncertainty. That's really what we need to be able to do, and today perhaps more than ever, to be able to live with certainty. You can't live with uncertainty. You can't act with uncertainty. You've got to be able to live with certainty, even though the world in which we're living is an uncertain world, and that's what Halacha deals with to a large degree. So the case here, and as is the case in the Mishnayos and in the Gemara, the cases are just very down-to-earth, practical examples of normal transactions that take place between people or did at that time. But what we're trying to do is understand the relationships. That this is not about a kohen who bought an animal from a non-Jew. That's not what it's about. It's about dealing with uncertainty. Let's see how that works. So the case is halokeach behema min ha'oved kechovim ve'eino yodea im bichro im lo bichro. You buy an animal from a non-Jew. We discussed last time that the non-Jew has no interest in telling you that the animal has not had a bechor yet, because that would make the animal worth less. Because the first baby that the animal has would go to the kohen, you wouldn't get the benefit of it. So the kechovim, in this case, the non-Jewish person, has no reason to be able to go into the details of what the background of this animal is. So the fact is you don't know. The fact is you don't know if it's had a bechor or not. You now get, if the animal has been in your possession all the time since its birth, then you know if it's had a bechor or not. You're dealing with a level of certainty. But here there's uncertainty. The animal comes, it's already an adult animal, and you don't know whether it's had a baby yet before or not. So the Gemara starts off with Rabbi Yishmael's view is that it depends on the age of the animal. Eiz bat shnata vadei lekohen. If it's an eiz, if it's a goat, and it's less than a year, certainly belongs to the kohen. If it's mikan ve'elech, if it's more than a year, then we don't know. Uncertainty only starts at a year on, because less than a year, the goats don't have calves. Rochel, if it's a lamb, bat shtayim, then it's 2 years. Vada lekohen mikan ve'elech sofek, 2 years to the kohen, beyond that is sofek. Porah v'chamor, if it's a big animal, a cow or a donkey, b'nai sholosh vadai lekohen, if the animal is less than 3 years old, clearly the next animal that is born goes to the kohen because it has to have been a bechor, mikan ve'elech sofek. So that's the principle here is, there are parts that we can clarify. This isn't all doubt. Up to 1 year in the case of an eiz, 2 years in the case of a rachel, 3 years in the case of a para, up until then there's no doubt. This animal couldn't have had a baby, and we can assume that the next child that's born is the kohen. The doubt only starts after that. So we try and minimize the area of doubt just to start with. Rabbi Akiva has a different view. Omalo Rabbi Akiva, ili bivlad bilvada behema nifteret kidvarecha. In principle, you're right. If the halacha was that a bechor is free of having to be given to a kohen, that you don't have to give, not a bechor, a vlad, if the din was that a calf doesn't have to be given to the kohen, if the mother has had a previous birth, then you're right. But that's not the din. The din is even if the mother had a miscarriage, you don't have to give the baby to a kohen. And it's not that easy to know whether the mother had a miscarriage. That could be at a much younger age. So you're right that that a cow doesn't have a calf at less than 3, and a sheep doesn't have a lamb at less than 2. And a goat doesn't have a little goat at less than 1. That's true. But you don't know that there wasn't a miscarriage before then. So the principle is right, but the application is wrong. You're right. If you needed an animal to be born in order to free the next one from going to the kohen, then it would be like you say. Ela omru siman havlad bivahimadaka, tinuf, vegas, or shilya, or veish, or shpir v'shilya. But there are these other discharges that an animal can release, which are indications of a miscarriage, sometimes a very early stage miscarriage, but still enough to make the next animal not a bechor. And you don't know whether that's happened or not. You haven't tracked the animal all the time. You don't know, and you don't know. And therefore, there's a principle here. What is the principle? Kol shia dua shebichra. If you know for sure that she's given birth before, ein kan lekoin klum, the kohen has no claim. Now remember, what's interesting about the bechor is there are two sides to it. There's a mandatory side. Who owns the animal? The kohen has a mandatory right to the asset. So the laws, some mandatory laws apply. Who owns it? How do we establish this? What do we do about this? So the first thing is we're saying, kohen has no rights in this. But there's another side to this. Leaving aside the kohen's rights, there's an issur, there's a very serious issur for me to eat the animal that is really a bechor. There's a kodshim side, there's an issur side. So there's a frumkeit side and there's an ethical side, a legal side. And that's why bechor is so interesting. So if you know that it hasn't had a child before, if you know that it's had a child before, ein kan l'kohen klum, the kohen has no claim. V'chol sheloi bichro harezi l'kohen. And if it hasn't had a baby before, it belongs to the kohen. That's clear. V'im sofek, any case where you can't be sure as to whether it has or it hasn't, there's a specific din for a sofek bichor, and that is ye'achel b'mumo labalim. It may be eaten once it gets a mum by the original owner. So he doesn't say it doesn't belong to the kohen. He doesn't say it belongs to the owner. We don't know who it belongs to, actually. All we have got is a halacha. So here's an interesting case where, have we really resolved the sofek? Do we know the facts?
No.
We don't know the facts, and we can never know the facts. All we can do is make a decision so that you can act with certainty. Number one, if the kohen says, I want my animal, we say, go home, not a chance. If the owner says, well, in that case, the animal is mine, I want to eat it, we say, not so quickly. No, not, you can't. It's a sofik bechor. It has a status. It has a status of a sofik bechor. So we have three statuses now. We have a bechor, we have a non-bechor, and we have a sofik bechor. A bechor goes to the kohen. A non-bechor goes to the owner. And a sofik bechor stays with the owner until it gets a mum, and then the owner is entitled to eat it. Those are the three stages that we have, and with the sofik bechor, we don't know the reality, we don't know the truth of what's happened. What we started looking into, and we'll do again this evening, is what about the first case about an animal can't have a child before 3 years old, animal can't have a child before 2 years old. How sure are we about that? And does it really matter how sure we are? So the... So I've printed these Tosfos and out for those of you who don't have, or I don't remember. I think I've printed out before as a regular Gemara page, but these will be a little easier because they're printed out in regular print. So the first one we look at is the one in Chulin.
Maybe if the firstborn has a mum, who gets the claim?
If the firstborn goes to the kohen, the kohen can eat it if it has a mum. Right. Now you asked either last time, I think, how do we come to this Gemara? How would you know about this Tosfos? What would lead you to this Tosfos? And if you see in your Gemara, have you got a Giloyon Hashas on the side?
Yeah.
So the Giloyon Hashas is the notes of Rabbi Kiva Eger. When he was learning, they found his Gemara after he died, and these were notes that he put on the side of his Gemara. And when he says, look somewhere else, it's because you should look somewhere else. there's something to see there. So you'll see in the Giloyon Hashas, if you have on the left-hand column, in very small print, you'll see Giloyon Hashas. It says Matnitin on the Mishnah, Benot Shalosh Vadai LeKohen. A three-year-old definitely belongs to the Kohen. Ayin Tosfos Chulin Memzayin Amud Aleph Dibur Amat Chilkol. Do you see that? So that's Rabbi Kivega telling us, have a look at this Tosfos. Don't learn this Gemara without seeing this Tosfos. So let's see, what does he want? What does he see that is important? Mm-hmm. And you'll remember that was a case of the lungs of these animals and the two lobes and the three lobes and the additional lobe in the middle, and is that normal or isn't it normal? And the Gemara is saying, It's become normal.
Mm-hmm.
The part of the Tosfos that we need, if you're looking at this Tosfos, then the part of the Tosfos that we need is the line above where you see in brackets you see Bechoris Daf Yud Tes Amud Beis, one line above that. V'nira de'ein raya. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're learning, and if you're using the proper Gemara, then it's in that Tosfos. Okay, I didn't bring that Gemara with me. Thanks a lot. Thanks, David.
Mm-hmm.
If you see on that, on the original Tosfos, it will be four lines from the bottom, about two-thirds along the way of the line, just beyond halfway of through the line, four lines from the bottom. You'll also see V'nira de'ein raya. Okay? Thanks. So Tosfos says here, V'nira de'ein raya mi behemot shelanu. Don't bring proofs from our animals. This is in the time of Tosfos. So the Gemara, the Mishnah and the Gemara, we're talking about the first 500 years of the Common Era, and Tosfos is 600-700 years later. So several centuries later, and he says, don't bring the veterinarian surgeons and the biologists to tell us what the situation is with these lungs, because why? The Shema Chalukot Mishalahem, because theirs might be different from ours. There's no, you can't assume that what was normal in their time is normal in our time. Ki da Ashkechan beferik halokeach behema, as you find in and now Tosfos on Chulin Daf Mem Zayin, refers back to our Mishnah, which is why Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, see what Tosfos is saying, because Tosfos is bringing a proof from our Mishnah to something he wants to say in Chulin, but by doing so, you'll understand how he understands our Mishnah. So it's important to see. And this is where I started talking to you at the beginning of the first year about how the Gemara trains you to think in that way, to go way beyond what's right in front of you, and to be able to search and see and draw conclusions from relatively disconnected places where the concept is the same. And what is the proof from our Gemara? De para bat shlosha shiyada vaday lekohen. What does the Mishnah say? If a cow has given birth at 3 years old or over, you know that that belongs to 3 years old or under, you know that that animal belongs to the kohen. Or if you acquired the cow from the non-Jew at 3 years old or less, the first animal that's born after it, the first calf that's born belongs to the kohen, because it couldn't possibly have had a baby before the 3 years, right?
Is there any consequence to giving an animal to the Kohen that you believe to be a Bechor but turns out not to be?
Well, the only problem would be then the Kohen wants to take parts of it to the Beis HaMikdash, and then
question.
You land off putting things on the Mizbeach which shouldn't be on the Mizbeach, so that's also a problem.
That's the flip side of the coin.
Yes, yes, both ways you're in trouble.
Right.
You've got to get it right.
So why did they conclude that it's okay to buy an animal from a non-Jew period? Maybe the answer should have been this, the whole thing is us, or then you have the problem.
Yeah, but you see how far they go not to to keep life livable. You're right, it's always possible to say, don't do it, forbidden, also. But you see how far the Gemara goes to find ways, to find a way to do it where it's mutter.
But there's a reasonably good chance you're going to be wrong on one side or the other.
We don't care about that as long as you follow the halacha.
Okay, fine.
So for example, when you have a glass of milk, how do you know that the cow from which the milk came wasn't a treifa? You don't know, so let's say, don't drink milk. But we don't say that. We say you can live with certainty even in a world of uncertainty. Do you know that the animal wasn't a treifa? No, you don't. If the animal was a treifa, the milk is treif. And there's a good chance that the animal was treifa. When you go to the abattoirs and you watch the shochtim working, many animals are rejected. So there's a good chance, there's a good statistical chance that that milk that you're drinking is treif, but it's kosher. What are the chances when you eat a piece of lettuce, even if you've checked it, that you're eating a bag?
100%.
Yes, it's almost 100%. You're eating a bag. But you're allowed to. You're allowed to do it. The halacha is created to create normal life, to enable you to operate and to function with certainty even though if we take Rabbeinu B'chaya's, you know, be afraid of consequences, you can go crazy. Maybe there's a bug in the letters, maybe the milk at the cow from which the milk came, you can actually go crazy. And that's why Torah Shebaal Peh is so important, because Torah Shebaal Peh is what creates normality. And where people do go crazy in today, as we sometimes see, is where people don't know how to learn. That's why learning is so important, if certainly for Rabbonim. It's not just knowing the halacha, it's actually being able to learn, because otherwise you can go crazy with fear. And there's some people who are. There are people who won't eat any vegetable. And you've heard one vegetable. In Los Angeles, not so much. In Johannesburg, it's terrible. Like every year, another thing has become treif. You know, cauliflower is treif, Brussels sprouts is treif, broccoli is treif. One after another, all these things are becoming treif. Why? But that's not the way halacha works. Halacha works that there are ways to deal with this, and we have to work within those ways. So it's a good example. You're right. Halacha could say, don't buy from a non-Jew, you don't get into the situation. No, the Gemara goes to all of this effort to figure out when yes, when no, how do you function? And even after all this, do you know for sure? No, you know nothing for sure. But there's a halachic approach as to how to do that. We know that in our days, a cow can give birth on the second year. And therefore, you see from our Mishnah, that you can't bring a proof from current science to halacha.
You cannot.
So at this point, this is certainly what it is saying. Then Tosfos adds something. Im lo shenoma, unless we say, there is another way to learn this. Dechashi yoledet b'shana shniya tashash kocha, that it can actually give birth in the second year, even in the time of the Mishnah, but it weakens her. Veshuv lo teled ad shana revi'it, and then it'll skip a year. She won't be able to give birth until the fourth year. So if an animal is born in the third year, what would you know?
No,
it couldn't have had a baby before. Right. If it's born in the fourth year, you don't know. But if it's born in the third year, if it's a maybe, says Tosfos, that's what the Mishnah means. Now let's play with that for a moment, because that's what we have to do with Gemara. Assuming that that's what the Mishnah means. So let's learn the Mishnah that way. If you buy an animal from a non-Jew, and it has a baby in its third year, you know that that baby must belong to the Kohen. Why? Not because it couldn't have had a baby in the second year. We know that it can in our day. We know that it can. But if it had one in the second year, it wouldn't have had one in the third year. If we learn it that way, then there is correlation between our science and the Gemara. So what's a more convenient way to learn? Tosfos the second way or Tosfos the first way? What makes you feel more comfortable?
The second way.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, then there's no conflict between what we find today and the time of the Gemara. It's all matches. And there's no proof from here that you can't bring a proof from present day to later day. This could be different. So at least as far as Bechoris is concerned, the case in Chulin with the lungs and so on, that's a different case. But certainly as far as these animals are concerned, there is a way to learn the Mishnah where you wouldn't have this concern about there being a conflict between modern-day science and what the Mishnah is saying. And that would be the easier way to learn.
Unless you've got a problem with tashash kocha, that maybe nowadays, because of good medical care that the cows...
Then it might again become a problem.
Then it's possible that they could have one.
Then but at this time, it wasn't an issue.
Yeah.
This time, that wasn't an issue. So now let's look at the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the Chof Galud Amud Beis, at the Tosfos there. Now you'll want to know, how do I know to go and have a look in the Tosfos in Avodah Zarah? That you'll see our Tosfos. If you look in our Tosfos, you'll see in the brackets already tells us to look at Avodah Zarah, the Chof Galud. So the beauty of all this is when you're learning well, you don't need to know it all. You don't have to know it all. Whatever you need to know, you will be sent to. If you're learning well, you will be referred to where you need to explore. So Rabbi Kivega referred us to Chulin, and our own Tosfos, which we'll learn in a moment, refers us to the Gemara and Avodah Zarah. So let's look at the Tosfos here.
Why didn't Rabbi Akiva Eger give us both those?
Well, he knows we're going to see that in any case because of the Tosfos. He's concerned that we wouldn't have noticed the Chulin, and we wouldn't have noticed that there are two ways to learn it. Mm-hmm. That there are two ways to learn our Mishnah. So that's what he wants us to see. But what's interesting in Avodah Zarah, let's look at the Tosfos in Avodah Zarah, which on this sheet is the next piece of Tosfos, where it says 24b. Para v'chamor bat shalosh shanim vaday lekohen. So now the Gemara in Avodah Zarah quotes our Mishnah and says, also we see from our Mishnah that a cow that's less than 3 years old can't have had a baby. Perush, that means, the kodem shalosh vaday lo yalda. Before 3 years old, it couldn't have had a child. Fine. V'yesh litmoa, asks Tosfos a question. Yesh litmoa, one can question. Any farmer will tell you that he's got 2-year-old cows that have given birth. The Mishnah is just wrong. V'yesh lomar, answers Tosfos. Devaday atan ishtane ha'et mikmo she'haya bedorot harishonim. Things are different today. Here's another way we get to Chulin. If you didn't see the Rabbi Kiva Eger, but you look up the Avodah Zarah sends you to Chulin. So you see the hyperlinks. Remember, I told you, one of the beauties of Gemara is it's so similar to technology, to the way you think. The idea of hyperlinks, the idea of thinking along different channels simultaneously. So we've got a Gemara in Bechoros, a Mishnah in Bechoros. We've got a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Do you remember the story in Avodah Zarah? Where we dealt with the Plishtim who wanted to test whether the problems were really caused by their holding onto the Aron. And so they took two cows, and the cows were hitched to a cart on which the Aron was. And the calves of the cows were put in a stable. And they wanted to see if the cows would go to the mooing calves, or they would go off into the direction they were meant to take the Aron, that would tell them if it was miraculous. So they did that test, and the Gemara goes into the whole thing, and then they sacrificed those cows. And the Gemara says, you can't sacrifice a cow which a non-Jew might have had relations with. Remember that whole thing? And we said, well, that's only if it's less than three. If it's more than three, non-Jews don't do that. So these cows were less than three. If it's less than three, they don't do that, but more than three, there's a fear. These cows were less than three, and the Gemara says, if these cows were less than three, how could they have had calves in the stables? We've learned that you can't have that. So you've got a Mishnah here, you've got a Gemara on a completely different topic in Avodah Zarah, you've got a Gemara in Chulin about lungs, three completely different channels, and you're working with all of them simultaneously, as you would on a computer, having three different screens open, and you're working on all of them, and you're moving backwards and forwards. And they're hyperlinked together. The difference between our hyperlinking and digital hyperlinking is digital hyperlinking goes by words, where the same word appears somewhere else, or the same phrase appears somewhere else. Our hyperlinking is conceptual, where the same concept exists somewhere else. That the machines, I don't think, have figured yet how to do. Maybe they are already figuring that. To be able to create a link based on the underlying principle, not just a word that is used to describe the principle. So here we see, through Tosfos and Rabbi Kivega, we see the hyperlinking taking place, bringing these three pieces of Gemara together. But notice that in Avodah Zarah, Tosfos does not bring that second option. You notice that? So in Chulin, Tosfos says there are two ways to learn this Mishnah. One way, there's a conflict between science and Mishnah, and the way to resolve that is to say nature has changed. But the other way is to say the Mishnah is talking about a cow that might have had a calf in the second year, but then wouldn't have had another one in the third year. No conflict between science and nature. The Tosfos in Avodah Zarah does not bring the second option.
Halacha does not change because nature changes?
No.
Then why does it does not?
Well, the application of halacha can change, but the halacha itself does not change.
Whether we learn something scientifically or nature changes, halacha stays the same.
Yes.
Why?
Because, well, let's finish all this and then have a look at it. For example, what would be, how much credence would we give to DNA testing to establish yichus?
We hesitate because things might change on the DNA technology also.
Yeah, I believe it's irrelevant. Uh-huh. The chemistry is irrelevant. That's not what yichus is about. It's about evidence and witnesses and how people live. The whole question of, is it the biological mother, you know, the birth mother, or the mother who's carried the chemistry of the who's the real mother? All of these things, there are things that clearly adapt as technology develops. That's what shaylos and tshuvos are. That we're constantly dealing with new situations created by technology. But the halakhic principles, as we'll see in the Rambam, that doesn't change.
And those principles are not scientific.
And those principles are not scientific, no.
So if we could develop a technology that would determine if an animal had already had a baby?
So it depends. If all we need is the information, and based on the information we make a halakhic decision, which is what it seems here. The Mishnah is not saying anyone over 3 year old, yes, anyone under 3 years old. It's saying over 3 years because less than 3 years old, it couldn't have. So clearly what we're talking about here is establishing information. When there is a technology that can establish information, we would use that technology. Mm-hmm. But we would not use the technology to create a psak. If the psak needs some input, that might be valid input.
If the technology which was able to prove that that an animal could have a baby less than 3 years.
Yes, then in this case, because we're just dealing here with scientific fact. Right. That's why the Gemara is so concerned, Tosfos is so concerned between the conflicts. Because all we're trying to do is establish facts. Once we've got facts, we can paskin halacha. But there are cases, as we'll see in the Rambam, where that's not the case, where science actually questions the halachic principle itself. And then what do you do? And we'll have a look at that as well tonight still. So now let's look at our Mishnah. So now we've got a Tosfos in Chulin that gives us two ways of learning our own Mishnah. We've got a Tosfos in Avodah Zorah that opts only for the one. What does our Tosfos say? So now let's learn our Tosfos, which is the first Tosfos, the right-hand column on our page. Para v'chamor b'nos shalosh v'adai l'kohen. So we're going on the comment of the Mishnah that if the para or chamor is 3 years old when you acquire it from the non-Jew and then it has a calf, that calf belongs to the Kohen because the cow could not have had a calf before that. Ein lefarish, says Tosfos, he starts off, don't try learning this Mishnah in the following way. That toch shtei shanim, elad im ita sheyalda b'shana shniya, lo hayta chozeret v'yoledet b'shlishit. Don't try and learn this Mishnah as saying an animal could well have had a baby on the second year, but if she did, she wouldn't have another one on the third year. Mm-hmm. Who learns that way? Tosfos himself in Chulin says, our Tosfos, don't go there. That's not the way to understand our Mishnah. So now you understand why Rabbi Akiva Eger said, have a look at that Gemara, otherwise you wouldn't really know where this Tosfos get this, where this Tosfos coming from.
Also, you keep using Tosafot as a person.
Yes, Tosfos is a body of people, it's a school of thought.
So I'm saying, this could be different.
Yes, it could be different authors.
Not someone disagreeing with himself.
No, it could be different authors. Written at a different time, even.
Yeah.
Afal gav diglo yoled b'chol shana ki inyan shepirish Rashi bi Gemara, as Rashi actually explains further on in the Gemara, gabi gedia, about in a case of a gedi, we'll get to that a few pages further, da amar yoledet eina chozeret v'yoledet toch shanata. The Gemara there says that a gedia doesn't give birth and give birth again within a year. Ufirish b'kuntris, and Rashi says there, Afal gav shagdolot chozot v'yoldot. Big gediyim do that. Big goats do that. B'toch shnatan haktanot ha-yoldot ein chozot v'yoldot. But the smaller ones can't do that. They can't have two babies in 1 year. So Rashi talks about it that way. B'toch shnatan. Ein lefarish kan. Don't try learning our Mishnah that way. That's not what our Mishnah means. Our Mishnah means it can't have a baby in the third year. In the second year. Can't be, it can't happen. Why? Because have a look at the Gemara in Avodah Zorah. Gabi ve'et b'nehem kalu b'bayit. The Gemara says that the Plishtin put the little calves in the stable. Ibi pfchuta mi'bat shalosh. And the Gemara says there, if we're talking about a cow that was less than 3 years old, that was used to pull the cart on which the Aron was, and was later brought as a sacrifice, if those cows were under 3 years old, Mikayalda, how could they have had a calf? And the Gemara doesn't answer and say, sure, they could have had a calf at 2 years old. It's just that they wouldn't have had a calf a year later, but we're not talking about that. We're just talking about one calf. Va'atnan, the Gemara there says, brings our Mishnah, para v'chamor benot shalosh v'adai l'kohen, shma mina toch shtayim lo yalda klal. So you see from the Gemara in Avodah Zorah that in the time of the Mishnah, the way the Gemara understands this Mishnah, a cow could not have had a calf in less than 3 years. What about today? Well, the Tosfos in Avodah Zorah has answered that. So now we're beginning to understand why the Tosfos in Avodah Zorah, the second one, only brings the one answer. Why is that? So let's go through it again. In Chulin, the Gemara said, the Tosfos says, there are two ways you can understand this Mishnah. You can understand that a cow cannot have a calf in its second year, in which case we've got a conflict from current day science, and the answer is things are different. Or you can learn it, it can have a calf within the 2 years, it just can't have another one within the third year. And then this Mishnah would mean, if you get a cow that is 3 years old and it has a calf in that third year, that belongs to the Kohen. That's an easy way to learn this Mishnah. The Gemara in Chulin said, Tosfos in Chulin says, I could learn the Mishnah that way. It doesn't create a problem for Chulin. So when you're in Chulin, that's an okay way to learn this Mishnah. When you're in Avodah Zorah, that's not an okay way to learn this Mishnah. And now we're starting to live with uncertainty so how do you learn the Mishnah? Well, it depends. If you're in Chulin, you can learn it this way. If you're in Avodah Zorah, you can learn it that way. And we learn, and it's so interesting to me, as we're going to go through this, I'm going to show you over and over again, to think of it that 15-year-old children are trained in this, in thinking this way. So, for example, if you look at, is light matter or is light energy?
It's both.
How can it be both? We know something can't be both. Well, it is. Sometimes it's this, sometimes it's that. It depends. We live with those paradoxes. The world is designed that way. We like to see things very simplistic. It's very simplistically. It's this is this and this is that. But that's not the true world. We've lived that way for thousands of years. We've made those assumptions. But now we're getting to know much more clearly in quantum mechanics and other areas. That's just not so. The things aren't what they appear to be. And the things are in constant flux. And there's fluidity. And energy can change to matter, and matter can change to energy, and you can't do that. So how do you learn this Mishnah? The way you learn this Mishnah changes depending on whether you're in Chulin or you're in Avodah Zorah. If you're in Avodah Zorah, there's only one way to learn this Mishnah. If you're in Chulin, there are two ways to learn the Mishnah. Now, what do you do if you're in Bechoris, where the Mishnah is? You're not overseas in Chulin, and you're not overseas in Avodah Zorah. You're local. What do you do now? So here we've got the Tosfos in Avodah Zorah. It says, when you're here, you've got to look at Shas and see where the Shas limits you. And Shas does limit us because of Avodah Zorah. So if you're here, if you're local and you're learning this Mishnah, there's only one way to learn the Mishnah, says Tosfos. If you're learning Avodah Zorah, there's only one way to learn the Mishnah. If your head is in Chulin, yeah, there are two ways to learn the Mishnah. There would be no proof either way, and it would be okay. So,
but in making a psak, you need to have all of them. When you stand now, you need to know all of these things.
Yes, so now we would be making a psak, and we can go into Shulchan Aruch afterwards and have a look and see how do we would it make a difference in psak? Let's think. So, what would happen if today you have a cow that is, you buy a cow that is 3 years old, can you assume that it hasn't had a baby? Well, we know from science it could have had a baby. So therefore, there's at least a sophic. We don't know. Either Mishnah says there's no sophic, it belongs to the Kohen. This would be a case where science clearly modifies the Mishnah, because the Mishnah is not, the halacha is not 3 years yes, 4 years no. The halacha is, if it's a bechor, yes, if it's not a bechor, no. Do you follow what I'm saying? This is not science interfering with what is and what isn't a bechor. It's just science saying, could she have had a baby before? Couldn't she have had a baby before? That's just a scientific fact. There we will use technology. So that's how we would work in halacha. We would say, definitely so. What we need to look at is, are you getting a sense as why you need to learn with Tosfos? So imagine now we would have learned this Mishnah just with Rashi. It would have been fine. We would have read and translated the Mishnah. And if we were a 10-year-old child, that's what Pirkei Avos says, from 10 to 15, don't learn Gemara, learn Mishnah. And on Mishnah, you don't get involved with Tosfos, you don't get involved with the Gemara. You just want to know clear case studies. This happens, this happens, this happens. The halacha is the following. But if we're trying to get into a way of thinking, Tosfos becomes a very important part of the way you learn Gemara. And that's why I said in the email, I said to you as well with that quote from David Baum, it's not really about the knowledge and the fact that we've had three shiurim already, I think, is that right? Or is this our third one? And we're still on the first mission and we haven't moved on yet, you know, and Daf Yomi we would have done three pages by now. But that's not what this is about. This is about how do you think and how do you deal with a Mishnah that could mean two different things? And we're saying, you're actually right. It does mean two different things. It depends where and what context you're learning it. It has completely different applications. But now let's look at this fascinating Rambam to see the other side of the coin, which I've got printed out here. I think I also printed out on the last page of the previous batch. So here I've got two paragraphs of the Rambam. Last time I just printed out one paragraph of the Rambam. It would have been on the very last page of that batch. So the first paragraph that I have on this, you do not have in the old batch, where the Rambam says the following. So the Gemara lists the trefus. Trefus means, trefa has a very specific meaning. Nowadays we say tref, it means non-kosher. But that's not what tref means in halacha. Tref means an animal at the time of its shechita had a disease which would cause its death within a year. That's what trefa means. And the Gemara lists all the trefas that there are, all the different diseases that could cause death within a year. So now we've got these cases of trefas, and when a shochet checks an animal, he checks for any of these diseases which are common. Most of them are not common, but some of them are common, and if something becomes common, didn't used to be common, we'll start checking for it. If something is no longer common, we won't check for it. So we'll check for anything from that list which is fairly common, the shochet will check for. And glut, when we talk about glut means an animal over which there is no question regarding any of these diseases.
Not only the ones on the lung, right? There could be other conditions.
Yeah, others as well. Yeah, in the stomach, there are other conditions as well. So the glut usually refers to the lung because that's where we try and find ways to allow it because there's so frequently problems there. And so therefore, glut can only apply to animals. A glut kosher milk restaurant is kind of nonsensical. There's no such thing. A glut kosher fish restaurant, a glut kosher chicken, no such thing. Glut means an animal, it means usually a cow or an ox or sometimes a lamb that has been checked and been found to be glut. Nothing to worry about. Says the Rambam, V'ein lohosif al trefus elu klal. We don't add to the list. So what happens if science now discovers there's a new cancer that the animals can get, and if they've got this cancer, they're dead in a year or in a month? Does that make the animal tref? Says the Rambam, no. But with science, we won't add. Shekol she'era lebehema olachaya olof chutz me'elu, shemanuchach mehadorot harishonim. Any illness that happened to an animal or a bird outside of this list which the Chachomim of the earlier generations formulated, V'iskimu aleihem bevatei dinei Yisrael, and the batei din of the Jewish people all over the world signed off on that list at that time. Efshar shetichye, it's possible the animal will live, says the Rambam. No matter what science says, if it's not on that list, it's possible the animal will live. So that doesn't make the animal track. Even if science tells you it's impossible. So here we've got an explicit Rambam. So we've got a list of illnesses. Science comes and says there's a new illness, not on the list. No animal can live longer than 2 months if you find this, if they find that the animal had this illness at the time that it was slaughtered. So first the Rambam says, I'm not so sure. Possibly it could live longer. And even if science says it can't, we treat it as if it could. Halakhically, we treat it as if it could. So that's a very clear indication of how we deal with science when the halacha has come down to very clear definition. Next paragraph, v'chein. Okay,
but we have a definition of what trefa is. Trefa is an animal that cannot live more than a year. That's the definition, not the list.
No, so it actually isn't. So we see, according to the Rambam, it isn't. The list, the definition is the list.
Exactly.
The reason these diseases are on the list is exactly. Because the animal can't live longer than a year. But the list is what makes the, okay. Absolutely right, not the halakhic, not the reasoning. Which links a little bit to the Mashu yesterday. That the reasons to ask why, when a Moshe asks Hashem why, yeah, you can ask why, but you can't make halakhic decisions based on the why. You can say, why is this list? What is common among all these diseases on the list? What's common is that the animal will die within a year. So what about a disease that isn't on the list? It's a lucky animal. It's not on the list, so it's kosher.
Did that list change over time before Rambam?
No.
So if you had had a Masorah from 2,000 years before Rambam, that would be different.
Right? That would be the list. Yeah, that's in the Gemara already, that's in the Mishnah, listed. That goes back a long time.
They're all listed.
Yeah. V'chein elu shemanu v'amru shehen trefa. And in the same way, the Rambam goes on, this is the piece that you do have there. So the list that they counted and said, these are the trefas. Af al pi sheye ra'e b'darkei ha'rufuah shebiyadeinu. Even though nowadays, current science might tell us, shemiktzatan einan mamitin, that there are diseases on that list which no longer cause death in a year, ve'efshar shetichye mehen, and an animal could survive it, ein lecha ela mashimanu chachamim. You deal with what the chachamim counted. Shene'emar, as it says, al pi ha'torah asher yerucha. You paskin by the Gemara, you don't paskin by anything else.
A very tough thing.
So, but it's absolutely black and white. You paskin by the Gemara, you don't paskin by anything else.
And where does that leave the industry of looking for all the new bugs and the vegetables?
You've got to look at it the same as in our Mishnah. So you see, there are cases where it would be. So for example, if we don't have a list of bugs, if the Gemara would say these are the bugs that are awesome, and some bright spark would come and say we've now discovered a new bug, we would say, well, that bug is kosher.
We have a procedure for checking for bugs.
But we know that anything that is classified as a bug is treif. Mm-hmm. So who classifies what is a bug and what isn't? Science. So now if science classifies something as a bug, that's treif. If it comes to a fish, for example, if somebody classifies a fish as a salmon, but it doesn't have any scales or fins, that would be treif. Even if scientifically it has exactly the same makeup as the salmon. And it's a new salmon that they've just discovered, unquestionably from the salmon family, it doesn't have scales and fins. Because there we're given very clear, fish with scales, that's what makes kosher, is the scales and fins. But in the case of bugs, we don't have a list. We just have, if it's a bug, it's a bug. Who decides it's a bug? Science decides if it's a bug.
So we go with science.
So there we would go with science. So to know when we go with science and when we don't becomes a really important art of psak. What's important here is for us just to realize how strong the Gemara is in the way we paskin, and that it stands in the face of science very often, and it doesn't bother us. The method of psak is not always scientific. The method of psak is to be faithful to the Gemara. That's what's primary. And that's why the gap between those who don't accept the authority of the Gemara and those who do is a really fundamental gap. That's the difference between Reform and Orthodox at the end of the day. And as I've been talking about on Shabbos, if modern Orthodoxy crosses that barrier, that's a cross into Reform. That's not a new kind of modern Orthodoxy. That's a cross into Reform. The moment we move away from this Rambam, we're into a different religion. Then we're in a man-made religion. And it's the Gemara that allows us not to become fundamentalist. It's the Gemara that allows us to reason, to work. But they're parameters, they're guidelines and guardrails within which we can wiggle. It gives us a lot of wiggle room, and it allows us to reason and to extrapolate and to find ways to do and to deal with uncertainty and deal with Rov and Chazaka. So what we're going to do when we're going to get into Gemara is we're going to start dealing with some of the mechanisms of dealing with uncertainty. So for example, do we know in the time of the Mishnah, forget all of this discussion, in the time of the Mishnah, do we know for sure that a 3-year-old cow couldn't have had a calf before? Is that absolute empirical knowledge, or is that an assumption? It's an assumption. But assumptions are very powerful in Gemara. And we're going to be talking next week about assumptions. So that's where we have the wiggle room. That's where we have the fluidity. You don't have to know something for sure. You have to be in a position to make assumptions. And there's normality is an assumption. Majority is an assumption. Science can be an assumption. There are all sorts of things that can give us assumptions. So it's in the area of how we manage sfeikot, how we manage doubt, and our dealing with Rov and Chazaka will be introduced to next week, that gives us a lot of flexibility and avoids us becoming very very dogmatic. But the premise, the primacy of Gemara is not negotiable. Within Gemara, you can move in all sorts of different directions, and you can play, and you can work, and you can question, and you can answer, and you can draw conclusions, and you can apply. But you can't work outside of the realm of Gemara, because Gemara has been signed off on by not just Baravina and Ravashi and everybody at that time when the Gemara was published, but every generation since then. The Chachomim of the generation have signed off on the Gemara as containing everything that we need to know and have in Jewish knowledge and everything else that develops from it. And that becomes just so fundamental to Orthodoxy, is to understand the primacy of Gemara of Talmud. And that's why it's so important to learn it. That's why it's such an incomplete education if we're raising children or adults who are not comfortable with it. And you don't have to know the whole of Shas, but you need to be able to be familiar with how it works, with its greatness, with its brilliance, with its way of thinking, because that really determines the way we make decisions within Halakha, within the Torah.
So doesn't the Gemara block innovation, findings, scientific